Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized, and with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com, that's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
You're listening to the Design Build Hunt podcast presented by Whitetail Partners. Here we cover all things whitetail property design, habitat improvement, and hunting strategy. Let's change your property for good. All right, welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Design Build Hunt podcast, which is brought to you by Whitetail Partners. This evening, I've got on the line with me Jake from Michigan and Dylan from Kansas. Guys, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having us, Josh.
Yep, good to be back.
I feel like it's been forever since we've done this. I don't know how long it's actually been since we've recorded, but I know I've done a lot of consulting. I've done a lot of traveling. Spring break happened during this and during the break. Jake, I think you were on spring break as well. Dylan, I don't know if you were or not, but man, it has been a busy, busy spring. So it feels like we haven't sat down to podcast together in quite a while. What have you guys been up to?
Like you nailed it there. A lot of consulting visits. And then, we just got back from Florida. Our family went down to Orlando for spring break. So we did the SeaWorld and pool stuff. So we were down in your neck of the woods. Got to see a couple alligators, right out. Uh-oh, we lost Josh.
Uh-oh.
lost him too, right?
He's gone.
All right, it's me and Dylan now.
All right, we're still rolling.
I'm going to keep this in there too. Like, I think people want to see some bloopers. I'm keeping that in.
All right, how's it going?
He's back.
We're back. All right. Yeah, we've got to keep this in here because this is a good blooper, right?
Yep.
So if you're watching,
we're going to keep rolling.
Right. Yeah. We're definitely not editing that out. Definitely not. I got this new mouse, right?
Yep.
And on this mouse on the side, there's this other black button, which is really nice when you're doing design work because it allows you to change the perspective in Google Earth without having to hit any extra keys.
Yeah.
It just does that for you. Well, if you accidentally bump that button, it acts like while you're on Google Chrome or the internet, it goes back. Like it's the back button. And so it sent me back out of the studio here. But I was asking what you guys have been up to, and you were saying you've been doing some consulting, you've been doing some spring breaking down in Florida. You were down in my neck of the woods.
Yeah. So we were down in Florida, did the SeaWorld thing. We were kind of hung out the pool for the most part. But then we went to another place. It was called like Gator World. That was pretty cool, man.
Oh,
like it was
nice.
not as crazy as like Tiger King, but right up there with Tiger King, but gators.
dude, growing up in the South, that we just called those like zoos and stuff.
So
Tiger King, I'm like, dude, that was just normal. I don't know. That was just kind of how we grew up. But seeing alligators, that's like a normal consult for me. So,
I thought about you when I saw the first day we were down there, I go, there's a gator. And I go, this is right up Josh's alley right here. I think I sent you a picture of it.
You haven't lived until you've seen one in a food plot. It's like, wait a second. What are you doing here? You shouldn't be here. Like, this is not for you. So, but Dylan, what have you been up to?
Well, yeah, it's been pretty action-packed. I think every spring I say that you can't fit another thing into it. Just all comes together all at once and a lot of things to be done. And so doing quite a bit of planting, just in different varieties, of, you know, still keeping on with the trees and some of that, and try a little hand at switchgrass here. But, yeah, the kids are real busy with sports. I've got three kids in two in high school sports and one in getting middle school. So we're pretty active with that, and I think we're going to push our vacations, luckily, a little bit later into the summer, so hopefully I can get some of this going, get my feet wet on a lot of these consults. And, yeah, luckily not run into any gators, but we did run into a pretty good-sized snake the other day, and I don't care so much for those critters, but yeah, it's part of it, I guess, when you're out in it. But yeah, just enjoying spring and the green up, and it's on us. So went and checked trees, watered, and they're thriving, so it's always a good sign, and just part of the fun of it.
Excellent. Excellent. I was on a property the other day, and the client said, "How many snakes have you run into this year?" And I said, "None yet, but there's a first time for everything every season." And I just kind of looked at him. He said, "Man, don't tell me that." Yeah. I think it flustered him a little bit. So if that was you, I'm sorry. Sorry again about that one. But no, it's been good so far. Well, I'm glad you mentioned trees there, Dylan, and kind of what you've been up to with some different plantings. I wanted to talk this evening about fruit trees. So I've been getting actually a lot of questions. A lot of guys are interested in fruit trees right now because they're seeing them flower, especially where I'm at. They're seeing them flower in people's yards. They're running into Chickasaw plum was a big one here a couple weeks ago, about a week or two ago here. All the Chickasaw plums were blooming in the area. They were very obvious. If you're driving down the highway and there's a patch of Chickasaw plum, they stood out like a beacon of white in the timber. So a lot of folks interested in them right now. Been getting a lot of questions, but also having to steer folks and say, "Hey, look, we can talk about it. Like, let's talk about what it looks like to try to get some good fruit tree plantings on your property." But you may have missed the boat where we are for this year. You may have missed the boat on a lot of different varieties. We're getting pretty late into green up here. You really don't want to be transplanting too much right now. And even if you do, you're not going to get any real fruit from that this fall. But I thought, hey, why don't I talk to a couple of guys who've got more experience with fruit trees than I do? That's probably the area of habitat management that I've got the least experience with. We've obviously done a little bit of everything, but that's something I came to a little bit later and haven't really done a huge variety. There are some guys that I'm like, dude, I've never even heard of these trees you're planting on your property. You know, I've kept it pretty streamlined with just a couple of different options. But when it comes to fruit trees, guys ask you questions about them all the time. What are some of those first, I guess, questions that come to mind or things that you're considering when it comes to planting fruit trees on your properties or on other folks' properties? Like, what are some of those things that are going through your head, and what are some of the reasons that you're including them, especially in a spot like a food plot where you've already got food going there?
Yeah, I would say almost every property that I've been on this year, the client has asked me, you know, are you going to be recommending, you know, fruit trees, apple trees? Everyone just kind of goes to apples right away up here. You know, are you going to recommend apple trees? I said, absolutely. You know, soft mass plantings are a part of almost every single habitat plan. The only time it wouldn't be is if we had this kind of question last week, if your property was nothing but like a flooded swamp, you know, then you had to kind of go a different route. But almost every other property, we're going to have soft mass plantings recommended to complement our fall food plots. You know, that's going to be an additional draw to get those deer to where we want them to go in the afternoon. So that's kind of one of the first questions that I get is, you know, are we going to be recommending them on our plans? And the answer is absolutely.
Right, right. And what are I guess you mentioned complementing your food plots that you've got going there already. What does that look like for you? Like what's the priority there? Is there a time gap that you're trying to fill in? Is it just trying to have something that just gives just a little bit extra? What does that look like?
Kind of both. So I want that food plot to be the number one draw in the neighborhood in the afternoon. I want to give the deer every incentive to go to that food plot. And so if that's going to be you know, what I'm planting within the food plot, you know, with the seed mix, or, you know, along with the different soft mass plantings within the plot. So I'm not just even sticking with one type of soft mass tree. I like variety. with that, because you don't, one, for like what you said, for a timing, you want to have different drop times. So you have, if your focus is going to be a lot of early season stuff, you know, you can have early season drop, maybe for like up here, the youth season. So for your, if you want to get your kids out, get them an early chance at a deer, if you have a soft mass tree that's going to drop early, you want some mid season drop time. So when it's kind of go time during the pre-rut and the rut, your soft mass trees are dropping. And then also if you like hunting late season, or if you want to try to hold those deer on your property during the late part of the season to keep them off your neighbors, you have some late dropping trees as well. That way you have a pull to that plot, you know, not along with your food plot, but with those soft mass trees.
Right, right. So Dylan, somebody mentioned you and planting trees a couple of weeks ago, and you kind of chuckled and said, yeah, it's a shame that I missed the habitat improvement fails episode, because you failed a lot when it comes to planting trees. So tell me a little bit about how planting fruit trees and stuff sort of make it into your planning and thought process, but also maybe what are some of those big fails? And then Jake, I'm going to open this back up to you as well. Like, what are some of the mistakes that you and others that you've seen are making when it comes to fruit trees?
Yeah, I tell you, a lot of people that know me know I'm kind of a little bit overboard when it comes to trees, and sometimes a little bit annoying. I know for my wife, when we're driving around the country, you know, I'm checking out different trees and just kind of really intrigued by them, you know. And it's one thing I'd say probably the biggest regret is just not getting started early on. I know there's a saying out there, I'll butcher it, but it's basically that the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago, the second best is today, or something like that. But that's definitely the case for what I'm dealing with. And so that's kind of where I feel like I failed the most. I mean, there's multiple things, you know, that I'm still learning on. And I tell you what, I listen to a lot of podcasts too, but there's some incredible resources out there now. I followed Morse Nursery is one that I actually, they've been making a lot of different varieties, and just impressive how much history and all the different hybrids that they've come up with. And like Jake mentioned, all the different drop times, and you know, a lot of them are, you know, September, October, November, December. You basically cover the whole gamut there in the fall, which is great. It's another compliment. And I think site prep's really a big one that you know, gets pretty easily overlooked. There's packages, and that's one thing that they go over, you know, one of the, I think it was Habitat podcast, they had Frank with Morse on there the other day, and I listened to it a couple times because it's just really good. So anyway, yeah, it talks a lot about, you know, weed barriers, which I've been using those for quite a while, and it helped your roots kind of reach out. But also the mulch and keeping moist. So the spring is a great time to plant. The biggest problem is you deal with the drought, so you're going to have to water. So if you don't have access to water, it can be tricky. You know, when it comes to protecting the trees, that's one that that's probably another fail that I've had. You know, instead of just spending the extra money, you know, we deal with rabbits pretty heavily. So a lot of the smaller shrubs and you know, like the plum trees, choke cherry, those type of smaller varieties, I just kind of plant them in bulk quantities. You can get them pretty reasonable around here. We can get them in pretty good sizes through our Kansas Forest basically service. So I try to plant a lot of those, but then you kind of get a little bit lazy and you don't protect them all. There's some rabbit cages, these little small protectors that really, I think, are pretty critical if you don't want to be wasting your time out there. So those are kind of my two biggest fails, probably just not getting going early and then not fully protecting them. But outside of that, I really don't think you can do too much wrong. I mean, it doesn't take much to have a little bit of a green thumb. I mean, the worst thing you can do is just make a little bit better by throwing them into some spots. And if you can find it reasonable priced, you know, I don't think you can really go too wrong with it, you know. But there's a lot of neat varieties to kind of mix it up. It's outside of what's typically in your area.
Right, right. Let's talk a little bit about site prep. So, well, first of all, let me back up. So people have to source their trees, right? And that's, you know, a lot of folks who are reaching out or have reached out recently or wanting to know, where can I go find some trees? And it's like, well, right now, this time of year, nowhere. You're not going to find them. So when are you guys, number one, maybe what are some of the sources where you're getting your trees? And number two, when are you placing those orders? Because I want guys to maybe go ahead and put this in their calendar for next year whenever it's time. So maybe Jake, there in Michigan, when are you placing those orders?
So that would be one of the mistakes I made this year, is I waited too long. So I wanted a very particular type of tree to go on my food plot. They didn't have it last year or 2 years ago when I made my initial order for this property. And I wanted to make sure that I had it to plant this spring. Well, I checked the website in October, I believe it was, to place my order, because that's when I made the order the previous year. And that's normally about the time when they're getting close to being out. So you want to make sure that you're going out there and placing your orders like late October, early November, for a lot of these, the reputable ones, the really good nurseries. And I went in there, and then the tree that I wanted was out. So unfortunately, that was one of the mistakes I made last year, was I missed my window. And that was, I think, mid to late October I went to go place my order.
Yeah. Yeah. That's about right. That's what we're seeing here as well. And luckily, we've got a lot of universities down here that we can buy trees from or place orders, and they will be very, very affordable trees, because they have, you know, obviously students who have their hands in all of this. They're producing way more trees than they need, right? So they're trying to get rid of these things.
Right.
And what you're saying is exactly right. It just so happens to line up with when I'm trying to sit in the woods. You know, it's like late October, early November. It's like, wait a second. No, I'm not thinking about ordering trees in late October. I'm thinking, where's that buck bedding? You know, and when he slips off the property first, which direction is he going? And then how long do I have till he comes back? And like, I'm all in strategy mode. I'm not necessarily in habitat mode that time of year. But Dylan, when are you making your orders up there where you are in Kansas?
Yeah, I tell you what, I think I got lucky this year, you know, because I hadn't really kept track of it running out until I started working with clients and trying to make orders for them. That's where I really noticed it this year. But I think I made mine somewhere around December, to be honest. But through the university there, Kansas State University is kind of where I like to go as well. Grew up planting trees in the CRP program with my dad when I was younger, and we would order from them as well. So it's been around. It's been really good as far as reasonable price, good size packages, and good quality. But with that said, I mean, there's things that we've done wrong, you know, when I was younger that I was thinking about too, with like the disease resistant varieties that are out there now. I can remember babying a couple of orchards with my dad when I was younger, and the diseases just won out in that, you know, over time. But you see those varieties that are out there now, and there's just some that I kind of favor that I think are huge draws that are kind of overlooked.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk site prep, and then, you know, helping those, you know, very, very young trees get established. What are some of the important things that we need to be thinking through? There may be guys who have just planted a lot of trees and they've kind of got their fingers crossed, right? Like weather's starting to warm up. We're potentially about to hit some really hot, dry weather during the summer. That's going to claim the life of a lot of new trees. So what can guys do to make sure that they're getting their tree off to the best start?
So for me, like it's gotta have sunlight. Like you have to, the location, you have to pick the right spot. So a lot of these trees need full sun, and most of our food plots have full sun. So if you're planting it within a food plot, you know, you're most likely going to plant it in the right spot. And then as far as like, once you have the hole dug, the tree in the ground, you kind of have those roots kind of spread away from the tree. You're not just like putting them straight down the hole. You're kind of spreading them out, cover the, you know, fill the hole back in. You have to make, at least here anyways, you have to make sure you tube that tree. So you drive that T-post into the ground, put that tube around the post and around the tree. That just protects it from the deer. So like if you're in an area with average deer density, you know, they're going to destroy that tree. And so you'll spend a lot of money on all these trees, and they won't even make it a season if you don't tube or put a cage around that tree.
Right. Right.
And then, yeah, keep watering the tree too. I think Dylan already hit on that, but that's huge. Yeah. Like if you want to make sure that you're at least the first year. So normally after year one, those trees can, as long as it's not like a crazy drought, like we get droughts here, but probably not like Dylan gets in Kansas. But like for us, like if we can get our tree through year one, you know, I'm out there watering my trees a couple times a week with we've got a big pond. And so I'll just go fill up a 5 gallon bucket with from the pond and throw it on each one of my trees. And I do that, you know, a couple times a week. But yeah, keeping those trees watered that first year is huge, especially during the hot summer.
Right. Right. Dylan, how are you managing to keep yours watered with, you know, I mean, it's important everywhere. We work on watering ours as well, but I feel like you probably have a little bit more of an uphill battle than we do when it comes to water.
Yeah, I tell you, a few different locations kind of call for different techniques. I've got some spots where it's literally grabbing 5 gallon buckets and carrying it, you know, I find out having one on each side equals out a little better than carrying just one, but we've got some that you'll carry from a creek and maybe you have to go a ways because you don't have access to the vehicle, but those are more kind of the hidden type plots. But for the most part, I'm using some of the totes, like 55-gallon drum I've got converted is one of them. I've also got kind of what they call those IBC totes, a little bit bigger square type. That works well for me. But one thing mentioned there, I know Jake said on that site prep that kind of stood out to me. I like to order just extra 5-gallon buckets, and then you just basically drill a hole in it. And I actually have that on site. I keep it there wrapped around around the T-post. So you've got your tube, the 5-gallon bucket, basically it's secured because our winds are strong. Once that drains out, it's going to be just sitting there kind of tied in. But that allows that to kind of seep into the ground, takes that whole 5-gallon bucket. And then you can just kind of speed as you're going tree to tree. You're basically going from the tote, fill your bucket, move on. You're not waiting on it to soak in. But I also use tree mulch. And one thing you got to be careful of there is not planting your trees too deep. A lot of guys think, oh, I'm just going to plant it in a bowl here and let that water hold, which is good in thought, but actually you can plant it too deep and actually does damage to that tree at that bark in the base there. So I'm no expert on it. I just know I've made that fail at home on some of my trees around here, thinking with that methodology, but really that putting the mulch in there seems to be something that also holds that moisture with that weed barrier underneath it. And that just really will buy you a lot of time, I think. And so the mulch, you can kind of shape that kind of like a bowl on top, just make sure you don't get it too deep around the base again. But that's kind of what I'm doing. And it seems to work so well so far.
Okay. One thing that I'm going to throw in here, you got Jake, do you have bears where you are?
So there are bears. They actually killed a wolf south of me just like a couple weeks ago. Yeah, that was kind of wild. Like that some guy was coyote hunting, thought he shot a huge coyote, but it turned out to be a wolf. So completely different topic. But so that was south of me by quite a ways. So that he could have been around here at one point. But yeah, we live on a river, and bears love to travel those rivers. So every once in a while, like maybe once every 5 years or 6 years, you'll hear a story of, you know, there's a bear, you know, near this little town, keep an eye out for him, you know, but I've never seen one yet. And I run a lot of cameras. And I run them year round. So we've been here 2.5 years, haven't seen a bear yet, but I'm sure we will eventually. But so that's not something that I'm like managing for though. So like, I don't need to necessarily protect my trees from bear just because the probability is so low.
Yeah. What about you, Dylan?
No bears down here.
Are there no bears in Kansas, period?
You know, I've heard rumors that southern Kansas has had some that have crept up. You know, Arkansas and Oklahoma have them, so I don't think it's too far. I mean, we've got mountain lions that have been documented in the last couple of years a little more prevalent, but they're, for the most part, just passing through. But, not too worried about them getting into the pears or any of the fruit trees for that matter. But,
Right. So we've got a pretty significant population of bears, both on my personal property and a lot of these landowners that I'm helping out, lots and lots of bears. So one of the things that I recommend when you've got a very young tree that's just starting to put on fruit, you know, you'll get those trees where you know that it's going to be a couple of years before they're really putting on the fruit, but you'll get some fruit kind of starting to come on these small trees. They'll put out just a few in the first year or something like that. I will go and snip those pretty quickly. Like I don't want those developing on the tree, and it's because of the damage that a bear will do trying to get to these young fruit trees. We actually had a pear tree on our property that, it got up, got big. It was great. Drops all the time. And a bear climbed the tree and went out onto one of the branches and almost split this tree in half. And it was, I mean, a sizable pear tree by this point, but you know, the 200-pound bear going out on one of the limbs, like it's going to find hard time. So if you are in bear country, be careful with your fruit trees, especially when they're young. It's cool to see those first couple of fruits popping up on there. You don't need them for the health, for the good of the tree. Go ahead and get rid of those and let the tree put its energy into something else. So guys, I'm curious now, let's talk a little bit about your selections, because I think they're probably going to be different for each of us here. We're in very different regions, but also probably some overlap. So what are some of your favorites that you like to incorporate And is there anything different about how you incorporate them because of the unique characteristic of that specific tree?
So for me, I think I said it earlier, I just really like variety, whether it's drop time and then the type of soft mass tree. So if I'm going to pick the three big ones up here would be apple, pear, and crabapple. And if I'm going to, so you can have all those in your food plots, you know, don't just pick one type and one type of tree. Make sure there's variety there. The more diversity you can get on your property, the better. But if I was going to have to pick, like if I only had a couple of fruit trees to plant, like I don't have a lot of room for a ton, and I can, maybe I can pick two different varieties, I'm probably going to go with pears and crabapples, mainly because they're a little bit more disease resistant. And I don't want to, this is a long-term investment, your fruit tree. And I don't want to spend the money on it, work on this tree for, you know, 6 years and then have it get wiped out by disease or have something happen to it. So for me, the, you know, pears, not very many people have pears on their property. A lot of guys have wild apples. And so if you put an apple tree on your property, yeah, it's a draw, but it's very similar to your neighbor's draw. So if you put a pear on your property, you know, the deer might not have ever had a pear before and they might really like it, and that they might come to your property over all the apples around because it's just something different and they just like the taste of it. And I really like crab apples because a lot of those trees are self-pollinating. They grow like a weed. You know, it's really tough to kill those trees. Like they're really disease resistant. So for me, I've been going really heavy towards crab apples and just getting different drop times with those. So that, and
yeah,
so those would be like, I guess the three that you can get for the most part up here. Some guys plant persimmons. I don't really recommend that up here in Michigan just because we're too far north, and persimmons, right, it's kind of a crapshoot. Like if you want to try it, go for it. Hopefully it works. But I would not want you to invest that much time and money into something just to have it die after a really cold winter or just not produce very much.
Right. Right. And so you nailed it there. I was going to say a lot of my recommendations are crabapple, pear, and persimmon for us, because that we're well within the native range of persimmon. Right. Like they grow again here like weeds. I mean, you find a grove of them in a oak stand or something like that, there's going to be 25 of them, you know, or something. I mean, they grow in dense, pretty dense pockets when we do find them wild here. But I really like those because, like you said, they're hardy. With our climate here, you just about can't kill a persimmon or a crabapple or a pear. Pears for me have been, and like you said, they're not, that's not like the flashy whitetail fruit that most people are thinking of. They're just kind of a, I don't know, when I pick one up and like take a bite out of one too, it's like, that's not very good. I don't like that. But at the same time, they're hard to beat because you can't kill those trees. They produce like super consistently. I don't have to worry about bugs getting to them. I don't have to worry about disease getting to them. I don't have to worry about drought getting to them. I mean, pears to me are just a workhorse of a tree where we are. And we've got, you know, sandy soils. And so it's like they're not great growing conditions as is, but they do what needs to be done. And they put out fruit. Persimmons can be a little bit more fickle for us. But you get them in a spot with decent soils and they're going to do really, really well. Crab apples, kind of the same thing. You know, as long as they're not getting too wet for us, then they're doing really well. Dylan, what about you? What varieties do you like to incorporate?
Yeah, I'll tell you, that persimmon is going to be a little bit to be determined for me as well. And we may be just a touch north also with our conditions. But right. Yeah, I'm going to give it a try. Got a few of them going, have a pretty good start on those. But I would agree, you guys hit the nail on the head with the crab apples. Some other varieties that I like, Enterprise, Gold Rush. I've tried some here at the house that have done really well as well. And then one of those trees that I mentioned earlier that growing up that actually did avoid some of that disease was a Bartlett pear. And that thing is loaded all the time and the deer just absolutely demolish it. I've got more people that it's in a spot where people can see it. They're like, man, you should have been hunting on that tree. That saw a big buck there, you know? And so it's like, that's a really good one. Keeper pear is another one that I've been kind of trying. So a lot of this, you know, I think that's going to be determined a little bit more in the long run, but just having that variety, we've got a lot of kind of natives that do well that are more of a fruiting type. You know, our American plums and Sandhill plums are great examples. Choke cherry, I think those are really kind of overlooked. And for whatever reason, it just seems to be, it goes hand in hand with properties that you see a lot of big bucks on. So I know it's partial cover, but there's cover and a little bit of that kind of draw to it as well. So yeah, I think that's kind of a big one. Apples, you know, I haven't gotten a bunch of the crab apples going, but I think that's a great suggestion you guys have there. I know there's some different dwarf type varieties that do well for deer as well. So yeah, I think there's a lot of good resources out there to learn from people that have got a lot of experience with some of those disease resistant, and going that route, you really can't go wrong. But given that variety, like Jake mentioned, having something that's not real prevalent in your area is just a great recommendation.
Yeah. And for me, you know, once I've narrowed down what those trees are that are going to be hardy for me in my area that I'm not going to have to baby because I'm not a tree farmer, right? Like I don't have the time to be out there as often as I would like to be. So, you know, once I pick the varieties that are kind of the workhorse, and it's like, okay, let's find something that's going to be dropping when I want it to be. That's anywhere from late September on through February, because that's when we're hunting. And so, you mentioned something there though, Dylan, that I think deserves just a little bit of conversation, is that more shrubby type native plants that we can be planting. For us, it's pokeweed, it's smooth sumac, it's American beautyberry. For us, those are absolutely phenomenal, especially in the early season. You know, those are going to be some real early season kind of things here. But honestly, the cover that they provide, like a smooth sumac or something like that, just thicket producing shrubbery. And so if you put those things on the edge of a food plot, you've got quite a screen in some of that area. Have you guys done much of that? Or
absolutely, yeah, that's really kind of the design I go to now, you know, based around my food plots, and trying to kind of use those as resources to kind of get that little bit of an edge protection and kind of edge feather, even if you're dropping trees into that stuff after, you know, if you want to create more of an edge over the top, that's a great place to do it, because ours, it's basically wall forming, you know. So just get a lot of benefit from that. You can create your own little openings and trails off of them. I think they're just dynamite, because you can really funnel deer with them too.
Yeah. Yep, for sure. What about you, Jake?
Yeah, same thing. So you're always trying to screen off your food plot, and you can do that in a number of different ways, and you can use shrubs to do that. So like this past week, we had just a little bit of extra time. So I went around and found some red dogwood that's on our property, and this is a good time to be taking those cuttings. I just took one long basically stem off the dogwood and cut it up into like, you know, a foot and a half sections, scraped the bottom nodes off and shoved it in the ground. Now I'm doing that along one whole wall of my food plot. And so we're in a little bit of a wetter area, that food plot is, so that the red dogwood will do well there. And I did that last year. I just kind of ran out of time or cuttings. I don't know why I stopped, but I only did about a quarter of the plot, and each one of those rooted. So I went through and I dug one up and looked, and yeah, it had roots growing. So in wow, 5 years, that's just going to be like a red wall. But that's going to do two things. It's one, it's going to provide additional security to that food plot, because that deer are going to, like Dylan said, it's going to provide cover. They're one jump away from safety behind that wall. And two, that's great food for them. You know, they love that browse from that red dogwood. So you're providing a food source as well as cover, and you're providing an edge, so you can lead those deer as they work that edge to wherever you want them to go.
Right. And you're talking year round browse with that red dogwood. I mean, it's good. Early season, late season, it doesn't matter. That's another one of those plants too that Dylan, you mentioned there, like, you know, I associate these plants with like big bucks because they just seem to be hanging around it. Like red dogwood, it's like, that gets me so excited for my days in Wisconsin. It's like, if there's a spot with a lot of red osier dogwood on, it's like, yeah, there's a big buck in there somewhere hanging out. So, all right, guys, anything else that we need to cover when it comes to fruit trees? I feel like this was just kind of a quick overview. We talked about sourcing, we talked about planting time, just a touch, but anything you'd leave people with, or if they haven't gotten any fruit trees in the ground, is it too late?
One quick one. Go ahead.
Dylan, you go first. I'll go second.
All right. Yeah. One thing I've kind of recently kind of geeked out on that I know is actually probably would fall into that fail category would be improper pruning or not pruning when I needed to be. That's one that I've just recently gotten into kind of some of the better resources out there. I mean, you got to kind of be careful about where you're getting that information, but there's some good stuff out there, but just making sure you're doing that the right way and freeing up those, you know, more I guess, beneficial type branches and kind of learning how to do that. And just, it allows your trees to thrive. You know, it produces so much better and you're just setting up the future if you can get them set up right initially.
Right. Yeah, that's really good. That's really, really good. Having not only the knowledge to know how to prune, we should do a video on that. Not only the knowledge to know how and what to prune, but also having some of those little wooden spacers, man, those changed things for me. When I started getting those little wooden spacers with the wedges inside that you can place between the branches. And honestly, I finally bit the bullet and just put some money into it, you know, and bought a bunch of those things, but they're super easy. You have them forever. And like you said, once you get that spacing where each of the limbs is getting good sunlight and it's getting good airflow through there, now all of a sudden this thing's producing double what it did before with half the branches. You know, it's amazing. So yeah, that's a big deal. What were you going to say, Jake?
I was just going to mention something that you kind of touched on earlier, Josh, when you were talking about bears. And that's actually something that I do on my trees for 2 to 3 years, kind of depending on how the tree's growing. And I actually, and that's pluck the flowers off the tree. And the reason that you kind of want to do that, you don't have to do it, but I like to do it, is because the tree only has so much energy throughout the year, right? So it's putting energy into its root system, you know, growing and producing fruit. And you really don't need it to produce fruit the first year or the second year. Really what you want it to do is establish that root system and start to grow. So what I do is I, once it flowers in the spring, I go and I pluck all the flowers off of my fruit tree, so it does not produce any fruit. That's once that flower is pollinated, it'll grow a pear, crabapple, apple, whatever. But if you pluck that flower, it can't do that, and then it's going to put all of its energy that year into growing its root system and just becoming a stronger tree. And so normally, you know, so if when you think about it, let's say you don't do that for 5 years, your tree, it'll be a good tree, but it won't be as good of a tree as what it could have been, or a stronger tree, as large of a tree, you know, as one that you did that for 3 years. So if you did that for 3 years and then let it go for two, that tree is going to produce a lot more fruit than a tree that you just, you know, didn't do anything to for 5 years, if that makes sense. So you're kind of, it's right, like an investment. You're setting yourself up for the future with that.
Right. And I think I've always been hesitant, or at least was hesitant, to like do much of that, because it's like, man, this is what I worked for. Like that little flower right there is what I've been working for. Or the, you know, this crab apple starting to come on is what I was working for. It's like, no, just be patient.
Yep.
What's more important is a healthy tree long term, so that you reap the benefits rather than risk the tree not being as healthy. So, all right, guys, great conversation surrounding fruit trees. Folks, if you haven't already, do go check out our YouTube channel. And hey, we'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening to this week's show. If you found this helpful, do us a favor and leave us a review wherever it is that you get your podcasts. And if you want to keep up with us, you can find us on Instagram at whitetail_partners, on Facebook, Whitetail Partners LLC, on YouTube by simply searching Whitetail Partners, or online at whitetailpartners.com.